to order. Chairman Wilkins' bill, House File 588, I'll move that bill. Chairman Wilkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 588, be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Health, Policy, and Finance.
Okay. Very well.
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill is kind of a reiteration of a bill that passed in 1999 that allowed small employers to purchase, and that's defined as small groups with between 2 and 50 employees, to be able to purchase health care plans that are exempt from state health care mandates. Currently, Minnesota leads the nation in health care mandates at about 62. Some of those are for benefits, some of those are for providers, and others are for insured persons. What this bill as is right now addresses are benefits and providers. And I do have an amendment that I'll move in a couple minutes after I explain a little bit more about the bill that takes out the providers based on some conversations with other legislators earlier. Basically, when we mandate health care benefits, it only impacts about one-third of the market. So when we pass a benefit mandate, only one-third of your constituents are ever going to be impacted by it, because most of the people, the other two-thirds or so, are impacted by the ERISA law, which governs self-insured plans. Most of your large employers, your Targets, your Wells Fargo's or whatever have you, are governed, they're primarily self-insured, and they're governed under the ERISA statutes. So basically, we increase significantly the costs for small businesses. This will go a long way to help those smaller businesses maintain coverage that they have. Many, as you know, are looking at maybe possibly dropping coverage because of the increase in healthcare costs. It also will help lower the ranks of the uninsured, because we know it's very sensitive to cost, and if they have a low-cost option, that will help. As I said earlier, similar wording was passed in 1999 under bipartisan authorship in the House and Senate, and it sunsetted in 2003. That is about the gist of it. There is one other provision that I added to this year's bill, and that is on page 2, line 18 through 27. What this is a consumer disclosure provision where the insurance carriers that are offering the plans need to disclose and provide some kind of comparison between a standard Minnesota policy and what that would cover and what the policy they're offering covers. This is, as the name implies, it's a flexible benefit plan. If an employer wants to purchase for their employees something that's somewhere in between having no mandates and having some of the coverages that are currently mandated, they can fall anywhere in there. They can start adding things back. It kind of lets the market dictate that, and the desires and the needs of the employer and the employees. So that being said, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the A2 amendment. I'm sorry.
A1.
The A1.
Very well. Representative Wilkins moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion about the A1 amendment?
A2 amendment?
No,
what's the A1? What is that? The question was, what does the A1 amendment do?
The A1, basically on page 2, removes lines 7 through 13. That's the part that exempts these plans from mandated providers. And that I was working with Representative Abler and agreed to remove that provision.
Clarification.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkin. So you're removing, I'm sorry, I didn't catch up here real fast. 10 through 13, not the 6 through 9, correct?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions about the amendment? That, all in favor of amending House File 588 with the A1 amendment signified by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'd be happy to take questions to the bill now, but I know there are testifiers. Maybe we should hear from them first.
We have one other amendment. Do you want to have that heard first, or?
Sure. Why don't we go ahead and take that, Representative Atkins, I believe.
All right, Representative Atkins, you want to describe your amendment and move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. I move the A2. What this would do is on page 1, delete lines 14 through 16. You'll note in those lines, and I should preface my comments by this would not be my plan of choice. I'm a small employer in South St. Paul. I got a little law firm. This would not be my plan of choice for my employees. Having said that, I also recognize that if the option is between no insurance or some plan, that some plan is better than nothing. And I know some employers are in a position right now where they're making that decision, Steve. It's something or nothing at all. And I think this is just one more tool in the toolbox. That said, if this is going to come out of this committee, I want it to come out in a fashion that is even more competitive. And if you look at lines 14 through 16, it says that the health carriers assess less than 10% of the total amount assessed by the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. That very very much limits the folks that can participate in it. If the goal is to make this as competitive as possible, as meaningful as possible to small employers, as affordable as possible to small employers, then we shouldn't have that that limitation. Everybody should be able to participate, and I think as a result we'll get the best prices, the best plans, the best thing for small employers as well as for us, our small employers' employees, in trying to provide for them the best benefits that we can afford. With that, I'll move the A2.
Okay. Any discussion about the A2 amendment? Mr. Representative Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give members a little bit of history as to why that section is in there. In the original law that passed, the limitation was 3%. Anyone with 3% of the market or less could offer the plans. The intent of moving it up to 10% was originally that we want to incentivize underwriters to want to come in and be competitive and build their market share. That being said, they couldn't do that if there was a 3% limitation. It would be, you know, they'd be penalized for their success, basically. So we moved it up to 10%, made sure that there was no wording on there for consolidated assets. The argument for getting rid of it is to allow the larger health plans to be able to offer these plans too. I'm very sympathetic to that, and we'll probably vote for Representative Atkins' amendments. It's whether you can decide for yourself whether you want this or not, whether you want to just incentivize the small part of the market, the small carriers to grow in Minnesota, or whether you want the policies to proliferate a little bit more and be more readily available on the market. And I think there's a very strong argument that Representative Atkins makes.
Mr. Chair, to that
point, Representative Atkins,
I should have added as well, if the logic defies me to limit it to 10%, we reward folks then. We want you to be successful, come into our market, do well. You hit 10%, though, and you're out of it. Right? I mean, that's what this would call for, is that once you've done a good job, people like what you're offering, you get to the 10% mark, well, now you can't sell it anymore. Frankly, it's nonsensical, and I understand the argument for incentivizing, trying to get small carriers here.
Competition's not always good, is that what you're saying?
Well, competition's great, but this isn't the way to go about it.
Okay. Representative Mulry.
Mr. Chairman, I thank Representative Atkins for not being pejorative or calling a position I may take nonsensical or anything like that. But,
stand by.
All right.
I'm not quite sure that was the only reason. There could have been a reason that we want to have in general most coverage if possible under the system that we set up with mandates, and that we were trying to make exceptions for certain cases here, and if the largest insurers were allowed to write this, there's a possibility that they would do some kind of pricing or other system that would drive people into this, whether if they could do that. So there could be a completely different reason for this.
Okay. Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilkin, specifically, are we looking at Representative Atkins' amendment would include basically the big three in this state, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Powell, that's correct.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilkin, what percentage of the market do they have right now?
Chairman, Representative Powell, I believe it's about 85% of the market.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe 90.
Any other questions on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Atkins moved Amendment A2 to House File 588. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Amendment carries. Now to the bill as amended. Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wilkin, there's a couple of areas here that I'm a little bit concerned about, but I think that they would be easily fixed. On line 18, page 2, it says the small employer must be given a written list of the coverage otherwise required by law. Couldn't you add the employer and the employees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, that was my intent when I started to do this, because I wanted that disclosure to get all the way down to the employees. I'm talking to Mr. Pender about drafting this. He said we're preempted in that kind of requirement by ERISA law. It makes no sense to me at all. I think, you know, obviously, I think the federal law should be changed, but and Mr. Pender might be able to explain that a little better than I can, but that was the result.
But, Mr. Chair and Representative Wilkin, this doesn't apply to ERISA, because ERISA is for self-insured, correct?
That's generally true. ERISA is very far-reaching in certain provisions, and maybe Mr. Pender can explain this much better than I can.
Okay, and then I would ask
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, ERISA doesn't apply only to self-insured plans. It applies to basically the state regulating what the employer is doing as opposed to regulating what the insurer is doing. I mean, that's why why we can't regulate self-insured plans, because it involves the employer.
Right.
And similarly here, we can regulate the contact between the insurer and the employer, because we can regulate the insurer under ERISA. We're not preempted from that, but we can't regulate the relationship between the employer and the employee in connection with a health insurance or other benefit plan.
Okay, Mr.
Representative
Chair and Mr. Pender. You know, when you're in another HMO, you get information about what your list of coverage is that... why wouldn't we give employees, in this case, a list of coverage? I'm still curious why ERISA would even apply to this. I don't follow.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, ERISA does regulate what employers tell employees and requires the summary plan description, for instance, under federal ERISA law to inform employees of what the coverage is, and that's the exclusive, under federal law, that's the exclusive regulation of that matter, so that we can't, as a state, have a differing requirement as to what employees get told by their employer about what their coverage is.
Mr. Chair, this is kind of important, I think, in this coverage, and I would like the Commerce, somebody from the Commerce Department to discuss this. I also wonder what would be wrong with the insurer giving it to the employer, that information. We can't mandate that the employer give it to the employees, but can't we mandate that the insurer give it to the employee?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, then we'd be requiring that the employer provide the insurer with the names and addresses of the employees before coverage is issued, and again, that's something that we can't regulate the employer in that context.
Well,
do you want Ms. Commerce to come and give their opinion?
I would like that, Mr. Chair, and I also would like to know from them. I can kind of understand what you're saying here with the data privacy issue and so forth, but what about once the employer has decided on a plan? Shouldn't the employee then get the information about what is included in a regular plan and what isn't included in a regular plan?
Mr. Chair,
what's included in their plan versus what's included in another state mandated plan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, the federal ERISA law provides the requirement that employees be given a summary plan description by the employer that meets the requirements of the ERISA law, and it requires that employees be told what is covered. It doesn't require that employees be told what is not covered that might otherwise be mandated by state law. So, and again, because ERISA is the exclusive source of law on that subject, a state can't require something that's different from what's required under ERISA or preempted by ERISA. The preemption of state law by ERISA is very broad, even when it seems like it's irrational.
Yeah, maybe I don't want to hold things up here, but Mr. Chair, I would like to hear.
Certainly want your questions answered.
I certainly do. Yes. Thank you.
Person from Commerce, come down here, please. Give your name for the record, and it's always been my understanding you guys ask Mr. Pender questions, but we'll find out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm going to punt here. I'm not an attorney, but what Mr. Pender has said I think is correct. And I also believe that most employers are certainly going to provide to their employees some certificate of coverage, some document, so the employees are well-versed on what their coverage is going to be. Also, former Representative Bill Haas just mentioned that an employer is mandated by a federal law. If there's a change in policy benefits, then that employer must provide some notice to those employees within 60 days after that change of those changes. So, in general, I would believe that most cases, most employers are certainly going to provide some information to their employees explaining exactly what their new benefits are or whatever benefits they might be having.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to work on this a little bit more and check into this for the next committee at any rate, because I think there might be some way we can make sure that people know the difference between these policies and other policies that they might purchase in the private market or on their own or whatever. I have one other issue in here, Representative Wilkin, Mr. Chair, and that is when the exclusion in line 6 through 9 on of benefits. The exclusion is only for the only exceptions are for maternity benefits and other benefits required under federal law. I'm particularly concerned about mental and chemical health benefits, and those aren't a costly part of an insurance policy, but they are certainly important parts. I don't believe that federal law, that those are benefits mandated by federal law. And can you tell me if indeed those are areas that are mandated under federal law, or would all insurance policies sold to small employers have the potential to eliminate mental and chemical health.
Representative Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, the mental health mandates at the federal level are for larger employees. So there is that potential, but it's we're trying to make this all-encompassing for state mandates.
You meant larger employers?
Larger employers.
I'm a large employer.
Did I say large employer?
I appreciate that. I wasn't going to get into that. Representative Davis?
I got to watch that. Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, one other thing is I went down the same road as you on the disclosure. I wanted to get down to the employee, but finding we're preempted, if you can come up with a creative solution that works and complies with ERISA, I'm certainly open to it. So you'll see it again in the Health Committee.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Goodwin's interest in going after some ERISA issues, Mr. Pender and I spent the last 6 years trying to do that. And I could save you a lot of time and say don't bother, but you go ahead if you'd like. We tried every angle, didn't we, Mr. Pender? I mean, every angle we could to help out with some things for the state dealing with ERISA, and very, very frustrating. And I guess I'm just enough Norwegian, I'd like to keep beating my head against the wall because it feels so good when I quit. Very frustrating. And as we were talking about these things, you just can't get around them. I mean, I'm very sneaky, and I tried every sneaky way to do it, and I couldn't get it done. But go ahead and give it your best. But I would just like to say, Mr. Chairman, to this bill that I think this gets more people insured. I think it gets them insured at a better price. And the mandates, Minnesota is the second most mandates in any state. The last sheet I looked at, next only to Maryland, I believe it was. And I think this gets more people insured at a better price. I think the Adkins Amendment made it better, and I think we should get it out of here.
Any other questions?
Representative
Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilkins, I understand that the concept of this is to deal with a really terrible health insurance market for small employers, and it's under the theory of something's better than nothing. But I have some concerns about how low can you go, and I'm not real familiar with what the minimum federal requirements are, and the maternity benefit is highlighted here. I don't know if that's because it's not under the federal requirements. I remember years ago, he was then Representative Wes Goglin bringing in a bill because insurance policies were written with something like, you know, a $700 maternity benefit, which, you know, maybe when I was born got you there, but nowadays I think gets you a hospital gown and inside the room. And it seems to me that we really should have some understanding of how low a floor this could be. And if Mr. Pender or others could address, what are those federal floors?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, the federal maternity benefit coverage applies to employers of 15 or more employees, and provides that you can't have something that discriminates against maternity as opposed to other benefits. So you can't have the kind of thing you're talking about where you have a special limit or special deductible or something that applies just to maternity. So you have to look at the maternity process, and if it's hospital stay, you cover it the same way as other hospital stays, and if it's physician services, you cover it the same way. So that's the federal maternity benefit. And also there's a federal mandate dealing with the requirement that maternity coverage cover at least 48 hours in the hospital, and a longer period of time if it's a cesarean, and that applies to all size firms if they cover maternity, which they have to if it's 15 or more employees.
Mr. Chairman, I noted that was a set out separate, so I thought maybe it wasn't under the federal mandates. But what is under the federal mandates? What is the floor that's the bottom here now? And it could be either of our counsel or the author of the bill, Representative Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, just what Mr. Pender said is the mandate under federal law is if you're over 15 employees and more,
you're required to have 48 hours of maternity benefit.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilkin, I wasn't clear. What I was asking is, what are the other benefits required under federal law? Does it require hospitalization? Does it require cancer care? Does it require emergency room care? I don't know what the federal minimums are.
Mr. Chairman, the mandate. Representative Loeffler, I know of several here. I don't know if this is an exhaustive list, but reconstructive surgery after mastectomy, and the maternity one, and that it covers maternity, and if it covers maternity, it has to cover at least 20 or 48 hours. If there's others, I am not aware of them, but there may be.
This, Representative Moore, do you have the answer to that question?
Heck no.
Okay. Representative Clark, you have the answer to that question.
No, Mr. Chair, but I do want an answer. That was exactly
that's
my question.
That's what I'm searching for.
And I'm thinking there must be somebody here who knows this, if this bill's come this far.
There's Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, the list that Representative Wilkin gave is the entire list of mandates. There are four federal mandates. There's mental health parity, which doesn't apply to firms that are less than 50. There's the maternity mandate that I just described, including the 48-hour maternity stay. And then the fourth one is the requirement for coverage of reconstructive breast surgery after mastectomy.
Mr. Chair, that's three. Mental health, Mr. Chair. Mental health, maternity, and reconstructives. That's three. What's the fourth one?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, the four are the general maternity coverage, and then the specific coverage of the 48-hour maternity stay. That's two, and then the breast reconstructive surgery three, and the mental health parity four.
Feds got their nose out of the insurance business, didn't they? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, that's a real small little list, you know. I mean, it really is. I know there was a bill last year to basically wipe out mandates in our health care coverage, and I think that was in the bill that didn't, in the final, I mean, it passed the House, and I think in the end, that's one of those that went into limbo. Is that right? We didn't remove all those mandates, or did we?
No,
I'm not.
We did not remove. Okay, so this actually takes us down the road of removing more mandates.
For this particular group,
right,
to make it more affordable, yes.
Right. I don't know if anybody else had this experience yesterday, but I had folks who were here from the arts community asking about this particular bill, and apparently, maybe Representative Wilkin, I don't know if he even talked to you or not, but they had a concern about being excluded because I think it had to do with the number of employees and possible requirement for full-time employees or employees who are working a certain number of hours in order to qualify. And I'm just wondering if you could first address that for the small organizations. In this case, it would be mostly nonprofits, I suppose, and this certainly would cover nonprofits as well as for-profits. Is that right?
Representative Walker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, the arts people did come see me. They didn't mention the bill at all. The bill does not change anything to do with full-time employees or part-time employees or numbers of employees. This bill simply addresses the small group market, which is 2 to 50 employees, and it puts them on the same playing field as the large employers, the 3Ms of the world, the Targets of the world, who currently are not subject to any of these mandates. We can't mandate one coverage or anything to them because they're covered under ERISA. So they're able to access, the very large companies are able to access much cheaper health care than are the small employers who we keep all these mandates on and say, if you want to drive in Minnesota, you got to drive a Lexus or you got to walk.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Ford.
The Ford was invented. I mean, there are, you know, there are some other options. It just seems so either or. You know, it basically, there would be, except for maternity benefits and a minimal mental health coverage and reconstructive surgery, people should know that if we pass this bill, they can't expect any other kind of requirement that they be covered by health care. It just goes a long ways towards removing all mandates, and I guess you're fine with that. I just think it's a serious question, and one of the reasons it's serious is that when people don't have this opportunity for coverage, whether they're a huge Walmart or they're a small, that doesn't provide health care benefits, or they're a small little business, you and I and all the rest of the taxpayers pick up that health care, through, our emergency rooms and a lot of other places. So if we're going to pass this, we should just have our eyes open. It is a very partial Band-Aid, and it's, I guess it concerns me. And Representative Davis is gone, but he sponsored a bill, last year that he and I had been working on for a number of years, that put a small mandate in. And some of these mandates, I think it's important to know, they're preventative. You get a test or you get early treatment, and if you don't have that coverage, then people go on to get really sick and need hospitalization or need very serious, very, very costly health care. And we just showed in that particular mandate last year that, the small investment in a test can save, I think it was about $750,000 in one case. So I just think we should be very clear about how very, very limited what we're doing would be, what this proposal would do.
Very well. Representative Zilka to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wilkin, when I was saw this first bill and signed on to it, being a small employer is what really made me interested in it. I have 6 employees, and oftentimes you want to provide coverage, but you don't have, small employers aren't typically very, very wealthy. And this is an option. It's maybe not, like you mentioned, the Lexus, or I'd say the Cadillac. But the question I have in relation to this, Representative Wilkin, is if they wanted to add back those coverages, could they?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gazelka, that's a good point, because the bill is called Flexible Benefit Plan for a reason. It's to provide flexibility to small employers. They don't have to have all or nothing. They can buy back anything, anywhere in between. They can fully ignore this and buy the regular plans that are out there. So there's no employer or employee that should be threatened by this, because they still have that option of going for the full benefit package that's currently out there.
Representative Moe,
you're third.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilkin, I was going to ask about Representative Gazelka answered one of my questions. The other is, in northern Minnesota, we essentially have one medical insurance provider. Oftentimes, small businesses can't provide insurance at all. I actually talked to one business last year who let employees go because they couldn't offer health insurance for them. Would this add additional competition to the marketplace in northern Minnesota, giving more options for small businesses, or is that's going to be something else for us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, I hope so. I think it will. I can't guarantee it, but I think this provides an attractive alternative product that some of the small indemnities or some of the other carriers who aren't out there in the rural areas can now offer and get some more options for people in the rural areas. I can't guarantee it, but I would think that they'd be interested in getting into this new area of the market.
Mr. Chairman, so, I'm not an insurance guy, but so this then would make it, give them a more cost-effective product to offer in places like Reamer, Longville, Castlake.
Absolutely. The effect of this is to lower the mandated costs of the health coverage. It provides some flexibility for those small employers, the ones that are either looking at dropping coverage, which a lot of them are right now, or the ones that don't have coverage currently. They'd like to be able to offer that to their employees, but they can't afford the current mandated packages, and they're not big enough to self-insure at this point and be able to do the same thing we're doing in this bill, but doing it under the federal ERISA law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilkins. I truly am sympathetic to the issue facing small employers, but I'm not convinced this is the only way to go, because one of the things that at least the small employers I know struggle in all kinds of different ways, and one of them is struggling with not having much sophisticated administrative staff and buying these sorts of services. And, you know, not having any kind of standardized A, B, or C of the, you know, the low coverage package is going to make it actually perhaps really difficult for them to get comparison bids or quotes, or even just to understand, you know, what's a good value. And I think that we need to, I think sometimes standardization at some low level can help create a competitive floor in which you can actually have, at least in markets where there are more than one insurer, you can have some competition because you can compare product line A and product line B. The other thing I'm concerned about, though, is what impact this will have on our public programs, because I could see not only would it potentially offer up insurance to people who are not currently insured, but it could potentially have small businesses that are struggling under premiums drop down to a minimal level such that they would be more dependent on state paid programs for mental health, for chemical dependency, for rehab therapy. I mean, I know having worked in Hennepin County, a lot of our services are to people already insured who have already used up their insurance benefit and not met the needs. And so I think there's some implications there for our program, particularly if families who are right now uninsured are offered, say, a cancer-only benefit, who would then be disqualified from Minnesota Care, which would cover their children with, you know, well child and those sorts of things, because of the insurance exclusion under Minnesota Care. And Representative Wilkins, have you thought through kind of the implications for our public programs and demands for that, and whether this would actually make some families less able to access the kind of care that they could afford through Minnesota Care or other vehicles?
Representative Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, to address the first part of your question, I don't think this is the end all. This is one tool in the toolbox for small employers. It's not any magical solution by any means, but it is something they desperately need, and I think the testimony you'll hear today shows that the small employer community is strongly behind this, and they've been wanting this for several years. As far as impact on public programs, I'm keenly aware of it. Since I've been here, I've served on the Health and Human Services Finance Committee every year and have worked to address cost shifting, anything that has to do with our public programs. And I think this will be a net benefit. I think this will help control our uninsured population and keep those numbers as low as possible, so that for the most part, nothing will be shifted onto the public programs. There are scenarios, like you say, if someone runs out of a benefit or they don't have a benefit, that they could end up in a public program. Most likely, though, the people that have the potential to buy these kind of policies would end up buying from MCHA rather than be on one of our regular public programs if for some reason they ran out of benefits.
Hey, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wilkin. Well, as so often happens, Representative Loeffler expressed some of the concerns that I have, but I also want to go... Well, let me first say I think we all share the real goal of covering more people at a better price, and I've been a small employer myself, and so I'm completely sympathetic to that. But if we're talking about here is getting a better price because we would have relief from mandates, my question is how much of the cost of health insurance is due to mandates? Because, you know, I'm wondering if this is a fix that really goes to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Could you address that, please?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, the numbers that I have heard in prior years, and I haven't gotten this number nailed down this year, but anywhere from 15% to 25%. And that will vary depending on what the employer and the employees choose for coverage, because this is, again, a flexible plan where they can add back as many of these coverages as they want. my guess is a lot of small employers won't want to have the full stripped down model. They're going to want to build back some, but they need some flexibility to tailor the coverages for their workforce.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Wilkin, do you have sort of an example of a policy that you're thinking of that might come out of this legislation, and sort of a ballpark example of what the cost saving might be for the employer, just so that we have some frame of reference here?
Representative Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, I don't know if I can nail it down any more than giving you those percentages, and maybe some of the testifiers have more updated numbers than that. But those were the numbers that were debated in prior years on this. I think generally medical inflation probably keeps them very similar year to year because the benefits, those benefits versus regular other benefits that are not mandated, are probably rising at roughly the same rate.
Representative Walker, wouldn't this a good example would be a large self-insured company? Would be similar?
It'd be
potential?
Yeah.
They can do the same thing. A large self-insured company can do the same thing that this bill is asking to do.
Right, Mr. Chairman.
And it's offered to smaller people.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I guess the question, I'm certainly no expert in this area, but the advantage that those large employers have is that they have a bigger pool. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what happens, I think, with the small employers is they don't have the large pool of people. The risk isn't being spread out as far, and a lot of times the escalating cost is due to that. And maybe other people who know more about it can speak to this as well. But so I don't think it's really an apples-to-apples comparison. I mean, I think the real question still is, you know, how much of this is really due to the mandates? And somebody else mentioned earlier that small employers might be left with a bit of an administrative nightmare here of having to weigh lots and lots of different things and picking these plans. And I think maybe a better way to go about this would be to fashion something that maybe put together some potential more stripped down, if you will, plans, but that would be standardized so that we could be looking at, you know, what exactly are we exempting people from, and giving employers a little bit of an easier time in terms of picking their way through this so that they actually have a shot at making some real comparisons.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilkins?
Pooling doesn't necessarily guarantee that, just because it's a big pool, doesn't necessarily guarantee you have lower rates. The state employee pool, I don't think, is extremely attractive. If you talk to some of the private markets, .com, a small burgeoning .com would probably have a better pool. It would tend to be younger, healthier folks, and I'd rather be part of that pool than the state pool, frankly, if I was paying for it all out of pocket. As far as having disclosure, that's what that whole section that Representative Goodwin and I had the conversation earlier is, so that they know, so that they can see what is the standard policy in Minnesota with the full benefit, full set of mandates versus what they're buying. The disclosure piece is very important to me. I used to work in the insurance industry, and there's nothing worse than when an insured buys something with a misunderstanding of what exactly it covers. So that's why we have that paragraph in there. Maybe, Mr. Chairman, we can get to the testifiers, because I think they'll answer some further questions too.
Representative Clark.
Could I just ask a question, maybe for the testifiers then, when they come up, and if not, maybe Representative Wilkin can address it when he comes back, which is, other than your opinion that this isn't going to cost shift, I'd like a little evidence that this is not going to cost shift, because it seems to me just very logical that if you take more benefits away from workers and they still need the same care, where do they go? They go to the public sector, and we pick up the amount. And I actually wouldn't mind that, but I don't think it should be sold under the guise that it's going to be, that somehow it's more cost effective for who. So maybe if the testifiers can address that, or you want
Mr.
to.
Mr. Chairman, I can address that, Representative Clark. I've never represented that there can't be any kind of effect on the rest of the market, but this is happening today. With probably the majority of Minnesotans are governed under plans where they can buy this same benefit because they're working for larger employers that have massive numbers of people that are under these plans, these very plans. And it's never come up in the Human Services Committee that those self-insurers are schlepping off this group or that group on public programs. Generally, these people are employed and by definition, and so they're not income qualified for our public programs. And there's a provision here that it makes sure that they keep the people in the pool and don't dump them off on MCHA. If they do go to MCHA, it'd be solely because they enter through the doorway that says if your policy does not cover a specific ailment or whatever, that then they'd be MCHA qualified.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe to get real simple at some point, it would be nice to have a fiscal note on the impact. And I got to say, you know, if nobody on the Health and Human Services Committee has ever raised those issues, I'm shocked.
with that, we got two more bills to be heard after we hear the testimony. We'd like to get to Representative Loeffler's bill by the end of this committee meeting. So with that, we have some more testifiers coming up. Would they come on down? Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Carolyn Jones. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. For the last 5 or so years, I think healthcare and rising healthcare costs has been the number one concern that we have heard from our members. And really, this bill, as was said before, is really about providing more options out there in the marketplace and providing coverage for more people. Nationally, if you look at some of the statistics, between 2000 and 2003, the percent of non-elderly Americans with coverage has decreased from 67% to 63%. If you look at our latest statistics in Minnesota, which are actually relatively low and really haven't been impacted by the real rising costs, we have seen a decline from 72% coverage in 1999 to 70% coverage in 2001. I think what we are seeing is that we are moving beyond just employers trying to provide coverage and shifting co-pays and benefit structures and really starting to see employers, I think, as was said before, looking at seriously dropping coverage. And I think that message is consistent with a survey that we did, a statewide survey of Minnesota employers this fall, that showed 16% of businesses are considering dropping coverage for their employees. That's a dramatic increase, almost doubling in the last 3 or 4 years from what we have seen similar answers to on that question before. So we are very concerned about the continued ability and affordability of coverage for employers in this state. And we desperately need some affordable options that they can purchase out there. As was said, Minnesota does rank number one in state mandates. And the Council for Affordable Health Coverage has estimated that those costs are anywhere from 20 to 50% depending on the state. Now, assuming that we are the number leading state in terms of mandates, I would guess that we are much closer to that 50% level than the 20% level. The Health Insurance Association of America has found that as many as 1 in 4 individuals without insurance are uninsured because of the cost of state mandates. Just a couple of other statistics, I think. Only 37% of Minnesota employers with less than 10 employees are currently offering health insurance. And I really think that that is a strong target market for this proposal in terms of what might be provided. And really, again, this bill provides some equity to those small employers to be able to tailor their benefit package to meet the needs of their employee base, similar to what a self-insured company can do. As was referenced earlier, Minnesota was actually the first state in the United States to pass this bill. It was enacted in 1999. and then was sunsetted in 2003. Since then, six other states have adopted similar legislation, and there's at least 14 other states that are considering this legislation this year. Florida is one of those states who has passed this legislation, and their Department of Insurance has estimated that they expect to save 20 to 40% of premium costs on some of these new plans, and that they have attracted new carriers into the state as a result of this legislation. I think I would urge you to support this bill. I think it will provide some additional coverages. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Just quickly, and I know you're running shorter on time here, maybe it's important to identify who I do not represent. It's the Trade Association of Insurance Companies that I do not represent, Blue Cross and the HMO. So I am the small carrier references here throughout this discussion, the dwindling number of small carriers in the marketplace. And I'd ask the committee to think about two questions as you look at this bill. The first question, how many Minnesotans are covered by the laws that you all here are passing on health insurance? How many Minnesotans are covered by those laws? And secondly, how many small employers are buying insurance? And Carolyn covered how many of the small employers, it is a majority or not, and the pressures to have that number go up. The answer to the first question was, somebody had asked that, how many Minnesotans are covered by our health insurance laws? And it's, you know, 3 out of 10, maybe a little bit more than that. So the debate here is increasingly growing not relevant to Minnesotans. That's the truth of the matter. The debate here on health insurance bills is increasingly not relevant to the marketplace. So House File 588 represents a, I believe, a good faith attempt to try to address, A, the question, the second, particularly the second question, is helping small employers who need help. The competitive marketplace for small employers in Minnesota is broken, period. You can't describe it any other way. The number of choices is de minimis. Large chunks of our state operate in a monopoly marketplace. I represent companies that write virtually every other line of insurance sold in the state, and they are competitive marketplaces, I'm happy to say. Auto, homeowners, property, general liability, work comp, health, life, annuities, they're competitive, healthy marketplaces, and I'd like to suggest that buyers win, or they do better when marketplaces are competitive. I think House File 588 represents, and it's the second effort to try to offer to small employers some other choices. The point of the matter is that these health mandates are justified. There's fact scenarios that are always around to justify them, but the point of the matter is that because of federal law, we're losing this debate. It's just going away. And so the ability to influence Minnesotans by the state policy debate is dwindling, and I think we ought to try to help small employers. I think we ought to try to help get some cheaper options. This bill does not diminish the ability to buy a fully loaded up policy. That's actually not the problem. They can do that today. What they can't do is they can't afford it. So why don't we try to help small employers get some coverages out there that are cheaper, and if it helps increase the number of employers who are buying and increases the number of insured, I think we've gained ground in the public policy debate, and I think that House File 588 should pass. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sturridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any of the three. And Mr. Johnson, your point at the end, I think very poignant at this point. What we're talking about today, I mean, the real problem is the cost is driving people away from what you described as a fully loaded plan. We're doing nothing in this bill to tackle that portion of it, though that is the, I believe, the major issue for all of us facing today. We're attacking a different problem today of, well, if we can't attack that problem, we're going to, you know, try something else. This is certainly one of the smaller tools in the toolbox that Representative Atkins was speaking of earlier. But to any of you, we've had this before, is what I'm hearing. I've been in and out of the room. We've had it from 99 to 2003, this ability in law. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Search, no. the law was passed, and if we don't have the time, I'd be happy to come by your office and give you the history of what happened after it left the legislature. And it left the legislature and went over to the Commerce Department, and the Commerce Department actually had to approve the plans that could be sold, and that never happened. So we never sold any plans under the 1999 law because it never got closed up and made operational. There was a sunset on it. It went away, so there were never any policies sold under the 1999 law.
Representative Sertich.
So why not? Why did it not happen?
Mr. Chairman,
I assume that when we pass laws around here.
Mr. Chairman, I've been around insurance lawmaking for a lot of years. There's a lot of laws that have left this building, and then they went a whole lot of different places after they left this building. But in particular, they didn't go into being implemented.
So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, why not this one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, there was a debate about what kind of mandated coverages had to be in the plan to qualify to be approved. And there was disagreement. There was, I really hate to open up this chapter because I have the chapter. I really would be happy to stop by and show you some of the chapters of that book, but it involved interpretations of the law, what other state statutes might be still required to have to be complied with because the 1999 law didn't exempt from it all other potential laws. There was just a whole lot that happened. The key thing is this. Nothing was sold under that law, and it wasn't because of a lack of interest in selling something. Nothing was sold.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Johnson, or anybody, how's this time going to be different?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, I can tell you that some of the language written in this bill attempts to address some of those interpretive disputes and disagreements, including language on page 2 of lines 14 to 17 that specifically references that the Commissioner of Commerce can't disapprove a plan on the grounds of these excluded coverages. In other words, the point of this bill is to get a major medical policy out on the streets of Minnesota for small employers that does not have the mandates. And so that's, I believe that, plus we have a different administration now than we did at the time when the earlier law was implemented, and maybe that was the quicker answer up front to state because the different administration, frankly, thought differently about this law.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that point, and that's exactly how it's going to be, Representative Sertich, how it's going to be different, is because you have a Republican administration that I would suspect is going to be far less consumer-friendly than Mr. Bernstein was, who I didn't always agree with, but who was somewhat of a consumer advocate. And, Mr. Johnson, you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, I was going to ask about that, because that's probably the reason why a former commissioner didn't approve any coverage under this that bill, of 99 bill, was because of what can be excluded in these plans. And I didn't always agree with Commissioner Bernstein, but, you know, I have to say this, and I think all of us on both sides of the aisle that knew him would agree that he was pretty much a strong advocate for consumers in the insurance issue. You know, I don't know what this bill is going to do, but when I look at, you know, all of what's being excluded here, I mean, first of all, the plan's got to have co-pays and deductibles, and it's got to have mandated, can exclude or modify mandated benefits. I sure as hell have to hate to have an insurance plan that maybe covered a hernia, and that was it, you know, because I can at least poke the hernia back in every once in a while when it pops out. But,
describe that a little clearer.
You know, I mean, basically, we're talking about self-insured, and that's what the argument for this bill is, Representative Wilkins. That self-insureds we can't mandate under ERISA law, and you're 100% right. But at least where I come from, I can tell you this, that those large employers who are mining companies that have self-insured plans, they negotiate with a union. And that union really has a good plan. And my mother, you know, she's on a lot of different drugs because of her Parkinson's disease. And she only gets a $105 a month pension plan, which covers her payment to U.S. Steel's Ohio Blue, whatever it is. And, but at least it covers all of her drugs. And the union negotiations with United States Steel and Cleveland Cliffs and that on the range provides very good coverage that I'll bet does not exclude hardly any type of coverage. So that type of comparison, members, you know, using this bill that, and represent Goodman was on the right track that, you know, saying, well, we're trying to help this, we're only regulating 30% or whatever you said, Representative Wilkins, of the insurance policy sold in this state anyhow. But you're missing a bigger picture here, and that bigger picture is in those large ERISA self-insured plans, a lot of them, at least in my area, have a union that negotiates a plan that is going to be 200% better than what the coverage is going to be in here. Because I look at this and think, you know, is this a futile effort if hardly everything's going to be covered and most everything's going to be excluded? I'm not saying that you're not trying to help people out. I think you are, Representative Wilkins, but it pains me to think, you know, what might be able to be sold in this state and if it's really worth it for those employees that think they got insurance and then go to the doctor and what's covered, Nurse Fritz, you know, nothing.
Representative Rocavina, what percentage of employees in Minnesota are union employees?
Mr. Chair, not enough.
Very descriptive answer, Representative. I could have anticipated it.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rocavina,
you're right. You know, the fastest growing union in this country is public employees. And it's a sad testimonial to this country because, you know, you talk about family values, which you guys talk about a lot more than I do. I got to start talking about it now. But anyhow, you know. But anyhow, my mother didn't have to go to work.
I'm glad you talk about
my mother didn't have to go to work because my dad had a good wage. He fought for a 40-hour work week. He fought for overtime pay. He had full health coverage. He even once in a while got a 13-week vacation from U.S. Steel because they negotiated that into it. He got two of them during his lifetime. You know, those were the things we had when we were a union, an organized society in this country.
Where's U.S. Steel today?
U.S. Steel today has made just more money in the fourth quarter of last year than they've made in a long time. Their stocks have skyrocketed. Cleveland Cliffs stocks are skyrocketing, which are the only two steel plants left on the range, basically, and they're down here tonight, ironically, asking for tax cuts as their shares have gone from 40 cents a share to like $40.
Yeah,
and Cleveland Cliffs, no, Mr. Chair, you know I'm not a capitalist. I don't have stock. I mean, I don't know anything about it. Outside trading is all I know about.
Okay,
who's next?
Yeah, that's me.
Representative Cleveland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wilkin and testifiers there. I'm still looking for some kind of an example. Can you just give me an example of, Mr. Johnson, maybe you can give this to me. Give me the most expensive mandate that you could think of that would be that people wouldn't have to cover under this bill. And if you can, tell me what you think it would save.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have here, I think that the chemical dependency mental health is an expensive mandate. Maternity is an expensive mandate. But the point is, I think Representative Wilkin indicated, is that collectively, I think the best estimate is probably about 25% of the premium that they're accounting for. So if those mandates, we're still talking about a major medical policy that has comprehensive medical coverage. There's just not all of the bells and whistles on it with the added coverages. To translate it to a real life situation, I've got some numbers here on a 4-employee group getting major medical in today in Minnesota. So that would have to cover all the mandates. And the coverage for a 4-employee group with 2 families, 2 individuals, is $2,200 a month. So if this bill ended up being able to drop, so you could drop the $2,200 a month premium cost to the employer, let's say it's 25%. Whatever policy would be filed under this, if this were enacted, would have to be actuarially approved, filed with the Commerce Department, and the rate justified. In other words, they would have to demonstrate what that rate would be, and it have to be filed. And that's what happens today. So the point is that it's going to produce a major medical policy that's going to cost less than today. And the mission is to try to get employers to buy it who aren't buying it today at these kinds of rates. And it's not the only solution. There's other solutions in the market that we all need to be looking at. But for today, this is a good one.
Fair follow-up. Thank you. But, Mr. Johnson, I don't think you really answered my question, though. I mean, can you give me an example of a policy that would be issued under this bill now? And remember, I mean, I think it was explained before that maternity is federally required, so you're not going to get rid of that
Chairman,
one.
No, let's talk about maternity.
No,
federal law requires
could
maternity
I finish my
for
question,
15
please?
And over, not so, under 15. Under
I think she wants to ask a different question. I think she wants to know what's going to be covered. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I'd like an example of a policy that, you know, tell me what things, you know, what would this a policy look like? I mean, I asked you before for the most expensive mandate, because I'm assuming that that's the mandate. Obviously, some of the mandates are not very expensive, and if they really are between 25% and 50% of the cost, then, you know, I want to know, give me the big one and tell me what it is, presumably, that would be missing from some of these policies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, the Council for Affordable Health Insurance has a list of all of the state mandates, and it breaks it down to what they cost. So you can get a copy of this report. It has what all of the mandates cost. I think what the beauty of this proposal does is it allows people to tailor that coverage to meet their own company's needs. Company with 10 employees could go through, get a copy of this, have an understanding of what the different coverages cost, and make that determination whether or not that's the policy that they want to buy, if it's worth the extra 3 or 5% in premiums to get that type of coverage. So I think it's difficult to try and say what that exact policy will look like, because it will be different for every company. But you can, if you are interested in seeing what the different coverages cost, that is available.
Mr. Chair, follow up, please.
Yes, we've got two more bills, but we'll forget them.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just think this is really very important.
We'll meet tonight at 8 o'clock.
It's a very important. I'm just asking for an example. I understand what you're saying, but I haven't heard one example. Nobody wants to talk about what are the mandates. I don't know what all the mandates are in Minnesota. You've got a list there. Can you just give me some that are the most expensive?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, Robert, did you go yet? I thought we had put them in the folder, so my apologies. But there's a list that they just referred to about all the state mandates, and it compares all the states. And we'll get that to you. That tells you what are mandated right now. Those would become optional. My guess is if you had a stripped-down policy, it would cover office visits, it would cover emergency room, it would cover surgical. It just wouldn't cover some of these specific itemized things. Is that what you're looking for? I have no idea what you're asking for. I'm just totally missing it.
Do you want to know what is covered or what is not covered?
People seem to be afraid to speak the names. Yeah. I'm keep getting this general. I mean, can we just say what some of these things are?
Give us one name so we know what you're talking about.
I can help here. I think what she means is the number of medical coverage mandates, and what are those medical coverage mandates? Because we know there's mandates on the insurance company.
So you want to see a list of the mandates?
We want to hear what the medical coverage mandates are that would be excluded.
Of these 60 or whatever
there's
number?
There's not 60. There's only probably
44, I think. 46?
No, there's probably only a handful of actually medical coverage mandates, and that's what we want to hear.
There's 31.
Mr. Chairman, there's 33 benefit mandates, 21 provider mandates, and 8 covered person mandates. for a total of 62. We lead the nation. We're number one.
We're
number one now. copies of this are coming down. I had intended to make sure they were in everybody's packets. They're not.
Do you have a list on you right there?
I've got one copy here with all my notes marked up.
Mr. Chair?
You want a copy too?
Well, I think we all should have
a copy.
I just wanted to say that to Representative Lincoln, I looked at this little document that we're going to get. It doesn't have what you're asking. It doesn't have the, and I think your question is right on, but it doesn't really do that. It talks about percentage of the premium costs. I think that's what it tells you. But, for example, it doesn't tell you that, a very expensive cancer or a very expensive cardiac surgery or, kidney transplant. It doesn't have any of that in there, although I think it has them as to what they cost the insurance premium. I think that's all that's in there. And I think her question, Representative Liebman's question, is really trying to get, it out here on the table. What are we talking about not covering? Are we going to cover, would these policies decide not to cover certain kinds of diabetic intervention surgeries? We've had some
opportunities. You're getting close and personal.
Right, exactly. I mean, so with the, and I mentioned cancer, which is close and personal to me. I mean, I think there's a lot of questions that about what would be covered and what wouldn't be covered. And I just think it should be on the table, but I still haven't heard an answer to my question about cost shifting. I just didn't hear that from any of the witnesses, and if I could still hear anybody address that, I'd appreciate it.
Is there a fair statement, Representative Wilkins, that what is on this list is, I think, is the things that are not covered?
The what's on the list that's being handed out are the current mandated benefits.
That are covered.
That we're basically allowing to be excluded from policies under this bill. Mr. Chairman, former Representative Haas is here. He's a benefit broker. He deals in this day to day, and I think he might be able to shed some light on this question.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Haas. Former Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. First of all, to Representative Clark's question, the policies are going to cover all your normal illnesses just as though nothing has changed. The only thing that's not going to be covered are the mandated items. So if somebody has cancer, they're going to be covered. If the policy says they pay $6 million in lifetime benefit, that is what's on the books today, or some of the carriers have unlimited lifetime. So somebody being limited for cancer coverage or heart disease or whatever it could be, or an ongoing illness, they will still have that coverage. So that's not being affected.
Wait, Mr. Chairman, can I just ask about that question, that particular point?
Fine.
Representative Haas, where in the bill does it say that?
I have not read the bill through, but I know the bill that I worked on in 99 and passed, we did not affect it. We've strictly dealt with the mandated benefits that were required by law under this section that included the different things as Port Wine stains, hair transplant, or wigs, I think it was. It's a whole bunch of little things like this, but they all add up to increasing the premium. But the normal benefits, and I know when we worked with the Commerce Department after this bill passed, we looked at several different benefit sets so that people could buy up to different options, and the employees would be a part of that process. There would be notification and things like that during the whole process, but we weren't affecting the basic policy as it stands today that's in the marketplace.
Well, but Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, well, just to that very point, I don't see that in the bill, and I'm wondering if our counsel could tell us. I know he's talking to somebody, but maybe just in a moment I could ask him a question.
Hey, Tom. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Representative Clark, I think if you look on page 1, line 17, 18, and 19, health benefit plans must be offered in compliance with this chapter, except as otherwise permitted in this section. I think the tender can confirm that the reference in this chapter, chapter 62L, which kicks in our whole state law structure of health benefit plans, health carriers, what's sold, what it has to comply with, puts it in that context so that that's what has to be offered.
Mr. Mr. McGee, I could just restate the question to Mr. Fender. And thank you for that reference, Mr. Johnson. On page 1, lines 17 to 19, what does that mean? Does that set forth a basic benefit requirement? Does that have mandates in it? Or what is the line 17 to 19 actually require to be in a health care plan, health benefit plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, that's a reference to the small employer chapter 62L, and says that these plans have to be issued in compliance with chapter 62L, which means they have to be guaranteed issue for small employers. They can't exclude particular employees that are covered under the employer's plan because they're too unhealthy or anything like that, and the premium rates have to be within the rating bands that are required in the small employer market. So it's basically the small employer reforms that the legislature passed in the early 1990s. And this section is coded in that chapter. If you look at line 7 there on page 1, it's coded in chapter 62L. And so that reference there in line 18 to this chapter means that chapter 62L. So basically it says that plans issued under this section have to comply with 62L, except for things specifically excluded here in this bill.
So, Mr. Chair, basically what you're telling me, it says that you can't exclude certain companies because of their size and so on, but it doesn't say anything about a basic benefit plan that there must be XYZ covered or included, that any sort of mandate, any sort of bottom line must be covered in the plan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, Chapter 62L requires all insurers to offer two basic plans that are spelled out in the chapter, and those plans have been very poor sellers. Hardly anyone has bought them, but the law does require that those plans be offered, and they are also plans that are meant to be kind of lower level plans. So it's not meant to be a floor in a way, which I think is the kind of thing you're looking at or thinking of. So those are the only things in that chapter that are specifically required to be offered. Are those two specified plans that, as I say, hardly anyone has bought?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Clark.
I guess I don't quite have the answer. If you and I were going to need some of the care that was in there, I still need to know then. And Mr. Pundy, I think we're getting closer. Are there required? Is there a benefit package? For example, must it cover diabetes? Must this cover cardiac care? Must it cover cancer? Must it cover? Is any of that kind of language in those, in that? Because I was hearing that, I think, from Mr. Johnson, that somehow we shouldn't worry that these things would all go away because they're included in there, and if they are, they aren't. I just don't know. I'm not familiar with that part of the law.
I'm just going to look at them quickly because I haven't looked at these requirements for a long time, but I can tell you that there's no general requirement in 62L that a plan that all plans offered under chapter 62L meet any kind of minimum requirements. In other words, you can offer a plan under chapter 62L with a $20,000 deductible, for instance, but because there's no exclusion in here from the mandates except for these two specific plans I mentioned, they are required to cover the mandates, and this bill requires them to do that, except that it has the exclusion for the benefit mandates.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, a policy generally states, and if you look even with their state insurance policy that you receive in the mail, illness is covered unless specifically excluded, and they will list the exclusions to those, and generally it'd be like, you know, self-inflicted wounds, commission of a crime, you have, what are some of the others? There's a number of things that they will not cover, but you know, and generally they're kind of way out things that you or I would never even participate in. And so, and they're just really, otherwise, when you look at it, everything is going to be covered under your general insurance policy. The minimum benefit set, I'll tell you, in the marketplace, I don't even offer it to my clients because it's so poor in coverage. And when you look at what's out there, the employer will purchase a plan that is going to cover his employees and give them good coverage, because the last thing an employer wants is disgruntled employees because they're health plan, especially in a small employer marketplace, because you get a 4 or 6 or 10 person shop. The guy who gets the complaints about the insurance is the owner. And so they work to make sure they have good products. And the thing is, the competition within the marketplace between the plans that are out there are such that their coverages all mirror pretty much each other, because they need to be that way for competition. And so, you know, they're going to cover people's illnesses.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, and I look around this table, and there's a few people that were around Representative Clark. Last year, and I don't know how long you worked on it, but you mandated that ovarian screening had to be covered. I assume they could pick a plan that that's not included. You were around here, you and Representative Giles, for the fight with bone marrow. It's one of the mandates I see Minnesota has, bone marrow transplant. It is a mandate that could be excluded, I assume, under this, as could many other things in here, prostate screening that I think happened during our stay, Representative Giles and Representative Clark, here at the legislature. So I'm assuming that a lot of these things could be excluded, the occupational and physical therapists, which, you know, this is a thumb that I cut, Mr. Chair, which probably wouldn't have worked at all, they told me, but I immediately went to occupational therapists the day the cast came off. This is a finger I didn't go to the doctor after surgery because the doctor didn't tell me I could go to occupational therapy. And the only good thing about this thing, it doesn't, if it had been one over, it might have worked a little bit, but it's stuck up in the air, and that's what happens when you don't go to an occupational therapist. So, you know, this is what we're doing here today, just so you all understand. This is what we're going to be doing when we pass this bill. As Representative Clark worked long and hard on ovarian screening, it could be excluded. Bone marrow transplants could be excluded. Representative Haas, or Mr. Haas now, correct me if I'm wrong with what I'm saying, but it could be in a plan that's approved by the commissioner and not offered to employees. And, you know, the largest employer in this country is Walmart, and we know how they take care of their and offer health insurance to their employees and compete in the market. None of those people will be, I can imagine what their plan will look like for the 10% that stay on after a year that qualify. So, you know, I'm trying to take care of that in a bill that I hope we get a hearing on here, Mr. Chair.
I'll guarantee it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, a quick question, and Mr. Haas, I think, can answer this. Looking at the mandates that state by state, and you said that Minnesota has the most mandates, then it would make sense then that the insurance costs in Minnesota would be among the highest, correct? Do you have that information? And maybe then compare our rates to states that might not have so many mandates?
Mr. Haas. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moe. Minnesota, it doesn't have the highest insurance rates. The East and West Coast do. Their rates are about 3 times what ours are. And that's due to their cost of providing doctor services and everything else that they do that's built into their cost. But as an area, yes, Minnesota is higher than North and South Dakota. We're higher than Wisconsin and Iowa. And we need to be competitive with those states because our people in Minnesota are building products that are sold outside of Minnesota, and part of the price of that product includes all the costs of doing business, and insurance is part of that factor. that you have to look at. So to give you specific examples, I can't, but I know what the market is around the surrounding areas, and I've worked in all five states surrounding, or four states surrounding Minnesota in the past with products, and traditionally Minnesota has been higher.
Would you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. House, would you have that information available for us? I know that's something that you work in.
Mr. House. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Insurance Federation could get that information for you from their members.
Okay.
So I turn to Mr. Johnson. He could probably supply with that. Mr. Chair, can I just make a comment, and I'll step aside here. But, you know, this package of benefits that you're talking about today is no different than what just went into effect last year with the health savings accounts. And everybody says, oh, it's going to be great. Everybody's going to buy it. To date, I've had two clients sign up and change their program to health savings accounts because they have concerns about changing to them. So when I go out, if I have an alternative benefit set to offer them, I'm going to probably get the same reaction by my employer groups because they want to do what's best for their employees. And so they will evaluate this. This is not just me coming in and saying, hey, I can cut your costs and let's do it. These small employers are concerned about their employees, and they want to keep good employees, but they also have to watch their bottom line because if their costs are going up too much, and health insurance has been a big factor the last number of years, because when you go out and take a 15% rate increase, they can't increase their rates 15% because they're not competitive. So some, you know, and I know when I go out and talk to small employers, we sit down with the employees and tell them exactly what we're doing because they're part of the shop and they got to know what's going on because they're the ones who are going to be the end users. So there's a lot of process that you go through as a broker and to make sure that you do what's best for your client. The client is the ultimate decider, but what I'm seeing is with my clients that I work with is they're staying with the traditional insurance. They're not going to the health savings accounts. There's interest in them, but when they really see how they work, they're a little concerned. So
Representative Mulry has a question for Mr. Haas.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Before he leaves, I'll let you ask it.
Right, exactly. Just as a real quick thing, just to keep Representative Davids happy, I have a question. The Chair, would you accept an oral amendment just to fill in all the coverages that are on black boxes here so that we could be for sure number one like Representative Davids wants? Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, my question for you
number
was...
Number bigger than 60?
Huh?
You see a number bigger than 60?
I would guess there's quite a few black boxes there. Representative Haas, I think you said in 1999 we passed a bill similar to this. I assume you were involved with it. I don't know if you were the author. You were the author. What was the reason that we had what's now on lines 14 through 16 where it was assessed? We went by only small insurance companies. What was the reason for that?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Mulry, what we're looking at is trying to provide some growth in the small employer or the small medical carriers that were still left in the state. There's only a handful. And the market share of the HMOs at that time were running 80-85%. And we were trying to build that market share for the smaller companies to make them viable so we had more competition within the state. That's why we put in the 3%. And we called it the 3% bill back then.
So that was the reason we did that?
Never heard that. Mr. Chair and Representative Mulry, strictly for competition to try to grow those smaller companies. Mr. Chair, just comment. I would love to have more than three carriers to go out and quote to my clients because I used to have 42, and I have three now.
Representative Mulry, you got a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my other question was for Wilkins. So that
Representative Wilkins, you mean?
Right.
Okay.
Is that okay to do now?
You certainly
can. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilkins, I commend you for trying to get at this problem we have. But do you know, it seems to me like where somebody's coming up with this idea and then throwing it out there, it seems like we should have a studied package on how to do this. And do you know, was there ever a requirement that either Commerce or Health or a combination of the agencies sit down and actually figure out programs that would accomplish what you and other people are trying to piecemeal? I'm not sure that it's accomplishing what we want.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, I think there was some kind of working group that worked on this predating me, and then they came up with the 99 bill. It has been hashed out significantly over the years. We had a bill last year that didn't end up getting passed, but this is a culmination of a lot of work that has already been done on this legislation. I think, as the prior testifier said, several other states have this in place, and about 14 others are considering it right now. So it's not an unusual idea. It's not. Every time I think I come up with a unique idea around here, it's been tried before. This one is blatantly plagiarized from Representative Haas and Senator Scheid, and we took it and we tried to improve upon it. I thought the 10% thing was an improvement, and Representative Adkins probably improved it even more by getting rid of that. It has, you know, we added consumer disclosure issues to it. So I think it's in the shape that it needs to be in. I think the small business community wants it. NFIB was going to be here today, but for an illness in the family of their lobbyist, they support the bill very strongly. I think it's time to get it done.
Mr. Chairman.
That probably hurts it in your mind.
Mr. Chairman, the fact that Mike, you almost had me ready to vote and jump for it, you really blew it there when you said Mike was pushing this.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. I'm sorry you aren't getting your bill heard, but we'll have another day, I promise.
I'll wait. It's an exciting bill. Representative Wilkins.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of people who have dealt with this issue and want to be part of the solution. My concern is that if for people, including the governor and others, who have lamented the growth in the Health and Human Services budget, I think this can have some real long-term implications. It can also have implications for our local hospitals in terms of uncompensated care. And it will also lead to lots of constituent calls, because behind every one of those mandates is someone who came in with a tragic life story who asked for those. And I really think that if we're going to try and even look at this, it ought to be a pilot project for companies that have never offered their employees health insurance, so that we don't have the companies that are right now offering quality, more comprehensive health insurance to their employees don't drop down to this, you know, cancer only, cancer plus heart and, you know, something else kind of policy, which this is open enough to allow. That's not your intent. That may not be the place we start out in the market, but I think it would allow it. And it seems to me, you know, we have lots of tools in our toolkit. When I go to fix something, I try and pick the one that's going to be most efficient and effective. We've got, you know, risk-sharing pools. We've got purchasing pools. We've got buying into Minnesota Care. We've got the health savings account bill that you authored that we passed. I don't think you need to take all the tools out at the same time. And I'm wondering whether you'd be open to having this only apply to companies that have not previously insured their employees.
Representative Wilkin.
No.
That's pretty short. This is going to go to the Health Insurance Policy and Finance Division next. So with that, members, let's vote on this bill. We've had plenty of questions.
I know you have.
Can you get it done in 1 minute?
Absolutely.
Because we got to have time to vote.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I just want to say that nobody has answered the question about the cost shifting and the so-called cost-benefit analysis. And that's
compared to Walmart, this is a small player.
I know it is. I just want to say nobody's answered that, and I think there are other alternatives. I was asking Representative Wolf, and I know that all of us care about small businesses. This is just my statement for the vote, okay? All of us care about them and the fact that many of them are priced out of the market. They can't offer health insurance. But there are alternatives, and I know my own senator is
is offering one, and Representative Wilkin and I only talk about it very briefly, but because that's not on the table before us and because I think that does deal with the public cost, I'm going to be voting no on this, and I hope that others will consider that and that we go for I would love to work with you, Representative Wilkin, on some other ways to do that.
Very well. Thank you. Now, with that, Representative Wilkins removes his motion that House File 588, as amended, be passed and referred to the Health Policy and Finance Division. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. And with that, we have to move House File 1127 to the File Science Division. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. This meeting is adjourned.